The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the initial edition of the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast. My name is Kevin McNamara. I'm here in Providence, and I'm alongside my cohort in crime, Bill Koch. Bill, how are you?
Kevin Mack, it's great to be back. How are you?
Back. We apologize to the many fans out there who I know have emailed and texted and DM'd us and all that other social media stuff looking for a Pick and Pop preseason podcast. I'm sorry to say that we were just a little busy. Bill and I have had a very busy fall. As anyone who doesn't know, Bill was the or is the Journal's Red Sox beat writer, and it's kind of an interesting year for you.
I was trying to think, actually, the last time that I might have seen you, I think it was on the field in Los Angeles after Game 5 of the World Series.
It was. Well, it was actually in downtown L.A.
Well, that's true, too.
Because, we had to have a end-of-season meal and libation. And needless to say, we were outnumbered by Red Sox fans out there in L.A.
Yeah, we do. It was a celebratory one. But that was two full weeks ago. Time flies. And here we are, a few games into the college basketball season now. And, as usual, as has been the case over the last two or three seasons in particular, we have multiple reasons to be excited here in state, both with Providence and URI getting going here.
Yeah, no, there's we could... First podcast of the year, we could probably go for an hour, but we'll keep everyone entertained, hopefully, for about a half hour. And, I'm going to start right off the top, Bill, with the schedules of both of these teams, the Friars and the Rams. I want to credit both because I think both teams have scheduled aggressively, scheduled as if they want strong RPIs, scheduled as if they have hopes to make the NCAA tournament. And that's a good and bad thing because I think both teams, they're going to lose some games. Providence has already lost to Wichita State on a neutral court. Rhode Island lost at the College of Charleston on Tuesday night in a difficult road game. There's more losses that these teams are going to take, and we're going to get into the reasons why. But the number one reason is youth.
Yeah,
and I'll tee you up here a little bit. Both teams need their freshmen to not only play but be productive, and it's really hard, and we're seeing it play out for freshmen to be productive right away in their college careers. Only the great ones do. No one should be surprised by this, but I think it's caught both fan bases by surprise a little bit.
Yeah, I think if we look back, you think maybe as recently as 20 years ago, Kevin, and you've covered college basketball for a lot longer than I have, but you think back to what recruiting used to be like and what these sort of exposure events, these grassroots events used to be like. They weren't all over social media. They weren't as publicized as they are now. Recruits, when they would sign with your program, except for the really, really elite ones, were sort of a mystery. And they would come in and you would maybe expect them to contribute by midway through their sophomore year. And then the last 2 years, you would expect them to be the best players on the team. Now, because you can go onto YouTube or you could go on Twitter and pretty much pull up these video mixtapes of these players, it builds your expectations that they're going to come right in. But I think what needs to be remembered is that these guys are freshmen. They're not free agents. They're not acquisitions. They're not finished products from other programs. They're players who have to grow and learn along with you. And I think, even this early, two games in for URI and three games in with Providence, we've seen some of those growing pains on the floor.
Well, two things happen with freshmen when they get to a college campus. Number one, they realize, wow, I'm not that good, because you're playing against guys who are 3 and 4 years older than you who kill you in practice. And it's the first time that these guys really have been killed in their basketball lives. They've always been the best player in their community, best player at their high school, one of their best players on their AAU team. And they're at 18, 19 years old, and they're going up against 21, 22-year-old men who have seen and done everything. And guess what? They should be better than the young guys. That's how it works. Now, are there exceptions? There's exceptions around the country. Turn on your TV. Those guys won't be in college basketball very long.
No.
Providence and Rhode Island, they don't get those kind of guys.
No, they don't.
They're a dime a dozen. Ben Bentel a couple years ago was able to jump after 2 years. Probably shouldn't have. Those guys, you know, again, very difficult to get. So not only are they mentally blown by, you know, not being the star anymore, not getting in the games. I mean, some of these freshmen won't even play for the first, you know, few games, if, you know, at all. That when they do play and don't play well, that's a double blow to their egos. Well, and it's how you mature and move on and get better. And guess what? That's not going to happen in 2-3 games.
Yeah, I'll just keep this specific to URI. I tried to make this point in my season preview. I think I might have written this for Bill Corey in some airport somewhere, maybe on the way home from Los Angeles.
I think that's a good bet.
Something along those lines. Go back to some of the recent pillars of the URI program. E.C. Matthews, his freshman year, finished in single digits 8 different times. Jared Terrell, his freshman year, his last 8 games, he reached double figures once, hit the wall in February, and, you know, couldn't really do much down the stretch. Hassan Martin, in the games that he started his freshman year, he reached double-digit rebounds 4 times. He had 5 or less rebounds 8 times in the games that he started. Now, those are the 3 of the best players URI has ever had in their program in terms of 2 guys who are in the top 7 all-time in scoring and another guy who's 2nd all-time in blocks and had 1,300 points
and,
in Martin.
And to interrupt, they had playing time. They had opportunity. They needed to take shots and score and struggle to do so. Where, you know, in this year's team, you know, Jermaine Harris started last night, played 17 minutes. Tyrese Martin came off the bench, played 25, but Dana Tate and Omar Silverio, you know, basically barely played. So, you know, the other guys had opportunity and struggled. These guys, you know, have to come in and, you know, they'll get their 3-4 shots a game. So your point is spot on. It's very difficult to produce at a high level as a freshman. So you need upperclassmen to carry the ball, especially early in the year. And, you know, we will start with Rhode Island because they've only played 2 games, got out of the chute right away with an impressive win over a rebuilding Bryant team at the Ryan Center. But last night, you know, the rubber hit the road. A real game for anyone who's disappointed by the URI loss. I get it, but you should not be surprised. They were actually underdogs in the game at the College of Charleston and lost 66-55. Bill, I did not see the game. I was at the Providence Holy Cross game, but you know, what'd you see?
Yeah, there were a lot of things that you might have expected to see from a young team, and, you know, a team that has veterans who are sort of trying to play different roles now as the lead dogs. You know, Fats Russell is going to be counted on to be a scorer for this team, not just energy off the bench. And last night was a learning experience for him, going 2-for-15 from the field, 0-for-10 from 3. You know, really struggled in the game. Jeff Doughton shot the ball a little better in the second half, but still finished 6-for-16, only had 4 assists in 39 minutes. That's not necessarily a line that you would have seen from him before. The best performance was Cyril Langevin going for 18-10 and playing 38 minutes. To be able to stay out of foul trouble and be on the floor for that long was very impressive.
Just going to say that the one number that jumps out at me is 38 minutes. That's a career high for Cyril, and only 2 fouls. He's been in foul trouble since he arrived on campus. So, and really the only established quality big guy that they have. So if they can get him to play 35 minutes a game, that's huge.
And he's passed down the foul trouble to Jermaine Harris, the top 100 freshman, who got his 3rd personal within the last minute of the first half.
Oof.
He got his 4th personal with about 18:30 to go in the game and had to sit for most of the second half.
So what did they do? Is that when they went with Ryan Preston for long minutes?
They went with Preston for some minutes, and they went with Tyrese Martin for a fair amount of minutes. He ended up playing 25 in the game. But you look at this game, and specifically you look at the end of this game. Rhode Island struggled mightily in the first half. They were 0-for-13 from 3. In the second half, I thought they did some really good things in terms of attacking the offensive glass, not settling as much from the field. But you get down to a point with 2 minutes to go. It's a 6-point game. And they have a turnover by Langevin with about 1:30 to go. Langevin misses a contested layup in the lane. Then you have a turnover by Doughton. Those are 3 possessions where you get nothing in a 61-55 game. And then at the end, obviously, Charleston makes a couple free throws and they spread it out. But those are going to be the spots, tight game, whether it's home, road, neutral, whatever else, where you're going to be able to mark this team's growth by how they execute in those situations. And last night, they just weren't ready to do so.
And I think it's pretty clear that they need, especially, again, early in the year, while the freshmen work up to speed, Langevin, Russell, and Dowden to play well together. And, you know, those three guys are good players, never been lead dogs. I wouldn't say that. I think Dowden really has been a lead dog, although surrounded by...
That's,
you know,
the key. Surrounded by what?
Really good, experienced players.
That's right.
But... I don't think he's going to have many bad games. I think Jeff is going to be very consistent and be their, you know, again, most consistent player. Fats Russell is the wild card because he's a super talented scorer. He needs to be able to take good shots. Again, I didn't see the game. I couldn't tell you how many of his 15 were good shots. I do know that 10 three-point field goals, that's too many.
There was a lot of settling. There were a lot of pull-up jumpers, whether it be no passes or one pass into a possession. And those are obviously not what David Cox is going to want to see. You sort of get lulled into the trap of being able to shoot threes when you go 13 for 27 against Bryant, and Bryant wants to get out and run and trap and press a little bit, and you're a little more complete and a little more athletic than they are, so you're able to do it better than they can. Mm-hmm. And you see a guy like Christian Thompson have 14 points in that game, and last night he took four shots. You know, so that's the sort of thing that, you know, Bryant was probably the best that you could see out of Rhode Island, the blueprint that you would say they could beat, you know, a lot of teams playing that way. Last night was a game where Charleston, the more veteran, the more experienced team, the team at home, dictated the tempo, more importantly than anything else, didn't let Rhodey get out on the break, took reasonable care of the ball. They only turned it over 12 times. And it's the sort of game where Rhode Island just isn't ready to execute in the half court possession by possession to win.
Okay, now let's flip to my reasons for concern with the Rams. The bulk of their schedule, not all of it, but the bulk of their schedule was put together, you know, a year ago. These schedules are done pretty much a year in advance, if not multiple years, with these tournaments that they land in.
Right.
The schedule's hard. The schedule's hard for this type of team.
No, it is.
So this is what Rhodey's facing here. They have Harvard coming in on Friday night. Harvard is deeper than Rhode Island. Has more size than Rhode Island and has more experience than Rhode Island. Now, I'm not saying that Harvard's better than Rhode Island. I think it's going to be a very competitive, really good game. But Harvard's very talented.
And they're actually catching Harvard at a good time because Seth Towns and Bryce Aiken have yet to play this year with knee injuries. And still, Harvard went on the road last night and won at UMass.
My point, exactly.
Right.
They're deep and they have size. Two situations where Rhode Island's working up to speed on that front.
Mm-hmm.
Then they play Stony Brook at home. Well, Stony Brook has already beaten George Washington and has already beaten South Carolina, both on the road.
Right.
So the next two home games are really difficult games. And I think when you sit back and you look at the schedule at the beginning of the year, you say, okay, check this. You know, Harvard, Stony Brook, no checks there. Those are difficult games. They have Brown at home. They have to win the game. And then the next three, they have two road games, at Providence, at Holy Cross, somewhat neutral up at the DCU. I mean, I can't imagine Holy Cross is going to, you know, bring in 5,000 people.
No, I wouldn't think so.
My guess is it will be a low-attended game.
Yes.
But it's certainly not at the Ryan Center. And as I saw last night, Holy Cross just plays a unique style that is tough to prepare for. And then they go to Mohegan Sun to play West Virginia. Will clearly be underdogs in that game, and then they go to Hawaii for three games. So my point is there's not a lot of bops there.
No.
And this team could use a couple bops.
Yeah, this schedule, Charleston was the second half of a home and home. They mm-hmm. beat them at home last year. That ended up being a good win. Charleston was in the NCAA tournament. You know how I feel about Harvard. I've said that many times on this podcast in previous years. I think they're probably the best program in the Ivy League at this point. They have talent that could play for just about anybody, whether it be Aiken or Towns. Whether or not we see them on Friday, I'm not sure. Chris Lewis is an all-Ivy League player, first team preseason, a load inside at 6'8 and about 240, and he'll test Harris and Langevin with a very polished back-to-the-basket game. You know, Stony Brook is one of those teams that wins a lot in the lower league, and there's a lot to be said for that sort of pedigree, that sort of belief that, that winning breeds. You know, then you go to Providence. They haven't won at Providence in God knows how long. I'm sure we'll get more into that going into that game. Holy Cross, you mentioned the Princeton principals there with Bill Carmody.
Mm-hmm.
They gave Providence all they could handle. We'll get into that momentarily. West Virginia, your man Bob Huggins, Kevin McNamara. For those who can't see Kevin Mack, he's got a big smile on his face right now.
Huggy at a casino.
Huggy at a casino. Folks, with your iPhones, make sure they are charged and ready. You could see something outstanding. And then the games in Hawaii, all neutral court games, a long way to go over Christmas. You play Bucknell first, a program that's had recent success.
Who just beat St. Bonnie at St. Bonnie.
And if you win that game, you could end up playing TCU, who's going to be a top 50 team throughout the year. Theoretically, depending on how the schedule breaks in Hawaii, you could play at least one top 50 and two top 100 teams out of your three games. So very, very difficult. And it's going to be baptism by fire for these guys. You look at the minute counts last night. I mean, obviously with Tyrese Martin playing 25, Harris limited by foul trouble to 17, but it stands to reason he would have played more. And you have to figure that, that Dana Tate and Omar Silverio are going to get more run at some point. So, you know, there are going to be mistakes made. There's going to be some growth. There'll be some good moments and some bad. And, you know, for URI fans who have watched this team go to the NCAA tournament each of the last 2 years, this is going to be a little bit different progression this season.
I'm going to flip to the Friars here. Last night, a comeback 70-61 win over Holy Cross. It was funny. I spoke with Ed Cooley on Sunday, and he was clearly not happy with the situation. The situation coming off a loss to Wichita State, 83-80, where his team missed 12 free throws and threw the ball away too much and really didn't play well and still had a chance to win and couldn't get it done. But more importantly, with only 2 days to prepare for Holy Cross. And Holy Cross is, you know, picked fifth in the Patriot League. You know, has some experience coming back that, that made them dangerous, but it was pretty clear after just a few minutes that Holy Cross was going to give Providence trouble because, circling back to what we talked about off the top, the other issue with freshmen is they can't play college defense. It takes a while to play college, to learn how to play college man-to-man defense. And, you know, the Friars played three freshmen last night, really only two for a while, in David Duke and A.J. Reeves. Jimmy Nichols only played 4 minutes. He was beat backdoor twice. That was it for him. And that happened over and over where Holy Cross, to their credit, shot 45% in the first half, led 37-33 at the break, and ended up going up 9 with 16 minutes to go when Jeff Battle, the assistant coach, said to Ed Cooley, I think it's time to use our length and athleticism and go zone. And you've seen this happen, Bill. It's a style thing more than talent, and sure enough, they make a switch. There's a 20-2 run, and, you know, order is restored.
Yeah, you know, Ed has sort of had that in his back pocket over the last few years to throw out that 2-3 zone, and it has been very successful for them. You know, and if you just look at Providence and you look at the length that they're capable of putting on the floor, whether it's, you know, the lineup that I prefer for them would have David Duke in it and A.J. Reeves and Alpha Diallo and Nate Watson, and that's just great size and length. You put that into a 2-3 zone, and all of a sudden those backdoor passing lanes aren't necessarily there, and, you know, Holy Cross is going to have difficulty getting the ball to the foul line and trying to make a shot from the nail, or throw a bounce pass past Watson and past Diallo to the baseline. Mm-hmm. You know, so realistically, I think that was a really good decision by Ed Cooley to go to that. And obviously his guys, you know, use not only their physical gifts, but, you know, their sort of discipline in that scheme to really stifle Holy Cross and turn the game around.
The question is where the Friars go from here. And, you know, they go this weekend to Mohegan Sun. They play a South Carolina team that is even younger than Providence. South Carolina, as I said, already has lost to Stony Brook. They bounced back with a pretty good win last night over Norfolk State. They put it on pretty good. But South Carolina, you know, only a couple of years removed from the Final Four. Physical, big, but again, young. It'll be interesting to see how they show up on Saturday at Mohegan. And if the Friars are fortunate enough to win that, that they have a great opportunity. They'll play Michigan. Michigan should be all over George Washington, who, by the way, in one game last week was led in scoring by Justin Mazzulla of Johnston and Bishop Hendricken.
Yes.
Who's only a sophomore, Justin?
Correct.
So to his credit, getting an awful lot of time with the Colonials, so I'm looking forward to seeing him this weekend. You know, if you look at Providence, they could use, after their, you know, loss to Wichita, is not a superpower Wichita State team of the last several years. Probably be top five in the American, maybe be in the mix for the NCAA tournament.
Got whacked by Louisiana Tech their first game, which was a big surprise to me.
It was. But again, look at what they lost.
Right.
You know, an awful lot of new guys. JUCO point guard, who I loved.
Landry Shamet went to the draft. They graduated a ton of tough guys down low.
And I think we all know that they're not going to lose a lot of home games.
No.
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 Even in league play. But you know, Michigan is the best team that Providence could play in the non-conference. So a great up, and you get them on a neutral court, not on a road game. So taking care of business against South Carolina is task number one, and it won't be easy. But a chance for a big weekend for the Friars.
Yeah, no question. And those are the type of games that, you know, obviously you would like to put in your back pocket. If you're able to win those, then it will excuse maybe a tough loss if say, Wichita State goes a little pear-shaped and, you know, that ends up being a bad loss. Or if you have a tough one in the Big East, whether it be, you know, someone who's in the ninth or tenth spot and you go on the road late in the year, you need a win, you don't get it. The selection committee could point back and say, well, they beat Michigan on a neutral court. That balances that off. Or they beat South Carolina on a neutral court, and that balances that off. And I think we've seen, Kevin, Providence, is like Rhode Island, has played a few neutral games at Mohegan Sun in recent years, and they've traveled pretty well.
Mm-hmm. No, I expect a good crowd. Not as much as a few years ago when Notre Dame was on the card. Obviously, they attract some people.
And that ended up being a win for Providence that carried throughout the rest of that season.
Yeah, that was the year that Providence had a really good seed. I think there was a six seed. That was a Chris Dunn, LaDante Henton team. They went down to Mohegan and beat Notre Dame and Florida State.
Yes.
So those are two really big-time wins. So, again, a good opportunity this weekend. Just a little bit on the Friars freshmen. David Duke and A.J. Reeves have started every game. Reeves really got off to a great start with 29 in his debut game against Siena, where he shot the ball just, uncommonly
impressive.
Good.
Yeah.
And then against Wichita, he had 19. Clearly was the top offensive threat that Ed Cooley had. Last night, Reeves did not figure in that defensive switch and only played 21 minutes. Then again, Holy Cross, you know, first of all, Bill Carmody is a great coach.
Yes.
He's been around for 20 years now, Princeton, Northwestern, and now Holy Cross. He wasn't going to let A.J. Reeves catch and shoot three-point shots, and no one should.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So he was 1-for-4 from downtown. I think it'll be interesting to see how Reeves especially develops, because as Cooley said, people do scout in college basketball.
Yeah, there is some video out there, and a lot of these games are on the stream. If you want to sit there and have two or three screens running like I did last night, like our sports editor Bill Corey did last night, it is more than available.
You think Michigan has a few Friar tapes?
I think they probably do.
Yeah.
John Beilein tends not to miss a trick.
No. Maybe one of the top 10 coaches in the business?
I mean,
it might be higher.
Yeah, you might be setting the floor there at 10.
Before we move on from the Friars, it's tough not to tip of the hat to Alpha Diallo. He has a double-double in every game thus far. 18 and 10 last night. He's clearly improved his three-point shooting, which was really the only big hole in his game. He's handling the ball better. He's vastly improved, and I understand why. You know, he was a preseason All Big East player.
No, quite simply, through three games, he looks like a pro. Mm-hmm. He really does. He looks like an NBA guy to me. Type of guy who could play on the wing, whether it be as a two or as a small forward. Obviously, like you said, ball handling and 3-point shooting will determine his ceiling. But for right now, in terms of Providence and the college game, he's going to be about as good as it gets. They will not play against many teams this year that have many better players than Alpha Diallo. He's been excellent so far.
Now their push is to stock the roster with as many versatile players as they can, and they're not going to have a more versatile player than Alpha in the next couple of years because he's one of the more versatile guys in the country.
Mm.
I know it's this podcast is being posted on Wednesday, but if you have a chance, get up to Bryant tonight. Jared Grasso, his very first home game for the Bryant Bulldogs. They play St. Peter's. Shaheen Holloway on the other side. Shaheen won't be in uniform for St. Peter's, but he was pretty damn good with the Seton Hall Pirates back in the day.
Give us a Shaheen story from Seton Hall, if you got one.
Well, Shaheen and was it Eddie Griffin?
He was with Eddie Griffin.
Pretty good team.
Tommy Amaker was the coach of that team. They were a top 10 team at one point.
And they had a small forward who was pretty good too, Marcus.
Yes.
Was that his
Marcus
name?
Toniel.
Marcus Toniel. Sweet 16 team went to the, I think it was at the Carrier Dome, as a matter of fact. It was a Sweet 16, and Billy Donovan was on his first run with Florida to the Final Four.
Oh, okay.
So it was a way back machine.
Sure, sure.
But Shaheen was a very good player out of New York City. Really helped the Pirates, needless to say. But Bryant has had two bye games, lost both. They went all the way out to Seattle to pick up a nice check and lost to Seattle. And the first one, remind me.
Was
Rhode Island, I'm sure, sure. Much less of a check, but easy drive to South Kingston. First ever visit for Bryant to Kingston. We'd obviously love to see that continue.
Yeah, I saw a couple things out of Bryant that I liked. They played without Ikenna Ndugba, which really hurt them.
Yeah, he could be out for a while, I hear.
Yeah, he's Jared Grasso has said day-to-day with a shoulder. But obviously, he's looking big picture. He knows that there's no at-large bid consideration there. They need to win the NEC to make the NCAA tournament. So he's going to hold him out for as long as he needs to. Rhodey didn't really let Adam Grant get off. He struggled in the game. One of Bryant's big guys, Juan Cardenas, I actually liked a little bit. Yeah. Junior college transfer from Midland, I think, in Texas, which has put plenty of guys into the college game. He showed some athleticism. Had a tough freshman guard named Joe Kaspersik, who you might know from the AAU ranks around here. He's going to be someone who can help them a little bit. But Bryant, getting its feet wet, much like anybody else with Jared, guy who had a lot of success as Tim Kluse's right-hand man at Iona, and somebody who I think will have that program up and running, very quickly.
Yeah, I think it's an adjustment for him as well, winning an awful lot of games at Iona, even in the non-conference.
Right.
Versus being a head coach, number one, and being a head coach at a rebuilding situation. So, it's a challenge coming off a 3-win season, needless to say.
Sure.
Brown has its home opener in kind of a unique situation. They play UMass Lowell on Friday night, but Mike Martin has put together a in-season tournament at Pizzitola Sports Center. They're going to play 3 days in a row, with the first one being against UMass Lowell, and then they'll play Sacred Heart on Saturday and Army on Sunday. So, tough to play three games in 3 days, number one, but it's an opportunity to get all of those teams that I mentioned together. There'll be other undercard games at Pizzitola, so I think it's almost a triple header or a double header every day.
Well, and as we know, most years Brown is looking for games. Generally,
home games.
They have played. They're going to play Salve Regina and Johnson and Wales again. Two Division III games, and obviously in the non-conference scheduling for them has been difficult. But they're in a stretch now where they're going to play five in a row at home. UMass Lowell, Sacred Heart, Army, Salve, and then Bryant. Then they go to Rhode Island, they go to Navy, and then they go to Butler, which is going to be their big non-conference test, the game that they like to play sort of in the Midwest to get their Chicago fan base or their Indianapolis fan bases involved.
I'll venture to say that Brown hasn't played five non-conference home games in a row in a long time.
Yeah, it has to be,
long
right?
Time. It's impossible to do. It really is, because obviously that they have to go on the road a lot.
So good for Mike Martin for getting this together, for showing some initiative. And Mike being a Brown guy, I'm never going to doubt his intelligence in terms of putting together something like this.
Well, good luck to everybody. Again, early in the year, we're going to try to do this every week. Bill's and my boss, Bill Corey, are going to make sure we do it every week.
Absolutely.
But looking forward to it, looking forward to a good season for everybody.